The Bible is for me.
Well, hello again, the Bible is Funny podcast family. I wish I could reach through this microphone and just give everybody out there a hug right now. This has been such a fun time doing this podcast. I'm so thankful for everybody out there that listens and shares with their friends and leaves reviews and messages me on Instagram to tell me you guys are listening. It's so fun. Thank you guys so much for coming along this journey with me. My name is Anthony Russo. Here on the Bible is Funny podcast, we talk about the funniest parts of the Bible and what we can learn from them. And we have been on a run of just some like extraordinary guests. We've had some really, really great guests, which has been so fun. But I have missed just being able to talk to you all, the listeners, and work through some stuff in the Bible. The guests are so cool, and I feel like if you've missed some of them, go back and listen because they've been awesome. I'm excited to be back with you, just me today. And as if I was going to forget about doing the family rundown, Penny Lane just barked. I don't know if you could hear that. I haven't done the family rundown because I've been doing guests recently. Everybody's doing great. The whole family's doing awesome. Crosby is about to finish kindergarten, which is crazy. We're going to a kindergarten graduation, which is a huge deal. Everyone's going to get him a bunch of gift cards, I assume. That's what you get as a grad present. Finn is doing so good. He's just the best. He just turned 3. He's just got this long, curly hair, this blonde, long, curly hair. I don't know if you've seen like pictures of me, or if you've, sometimes I'll do a picture of me on Instagram or a picture of the kids. But if you follow my wife at Rachel Russo, she does pictures of like our family and stuff a lot. Finn is so cool. He looks nothing like me. Finn could not look less like me. I am balding with dark hair. Finn has this great, thick, blonde, curly hair, blue eyes. I have brown eyes. He looks just like Rachel, and he's just the coolest looking kid. So Finn's awesome. A big change in our family dynamic is that I got an adult-sized scooter. So we will all go out and scooter together around the neighborhood, the whole crew of us. And we get on the scooters and we ride around the neighborhood saying, "Scooter gang, 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 scooter gang, gang, gang." So that's been a big change in our life recently, that we found a scooter for me. So we're all scooting now. It was annoying before I got the scooter because they would scoot and I would be walking or something and it was hard to keep up. So I got an adult-sized scooter. A couple other big things I want to mention. It is, I'm recording this in April of 2021, which means that we are 1 month away from Rachel and I's 10-year anniversary. 10 years is wild because you start saying like a decade. That feels like a long time. 10 years. It went by so fast. It's crazy. So we got a 10-year anniversary coming up. In other news, I mentioned that I was working on a book a while ago, and that has been coming along great. We've been working with the publisher and editors and working on like a cover and all these really fun things. I cannot wait to show everybody this book and start talking about it more. That will be coming out in October of this year. You can see a book. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the title. I don't know what I'm allowed to say about the book, except for that I'm working on the book. And it's going to be so fun. I can't wait to talk more about it, show everybody. But that's been a lot of work this year, and I can't wait for that to come out this fall. So I think that's pretty well the family. Oh, and Penny's doing great. Penny's doing so good. She's great. Penny's wonderful. She does a great job of scaring off people when they try to come in our house. She's really taken that on as her purpose in life. And she does a great job. She barks at everybody all the time. Family rundown is done. Here's what I want to do with everybody today. I want to work through a story in the Bible that is a little bit of a longer story than I've attempted to do on here before. It's a couple of chapters. We're going to cover a couple of chapters today on the podcast from Judges, starting in Judges chapter 14. Judges chapter 13 is where we're going to start. Judges chapter 13. Judges, book in the Old Testament, early on, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges. Early on in the Old Testament. And it's a really interesting book. It's honestly one of my favorite books in the Bible. I think I've said that on the podcast before. Because it's like a bunch of short stories almost. Like it's documenting leaders of the Israelites before they got a king. They were led by these people. They call them judges. So it's a bunch of really interesting stories of these characters that led the Israelites. Some of them are very, very short, like, you know, a couple of sentences. And then some of them are longer and a little bit more popular, they're a little bit more well-known. So the story we're going to cover today starts in Judges chapter 13, and it is the story of Samson. The story of Samson. You may have some familiarity with Samson. You may have heard of Samson and Delilah. That's kind of the big one. A lot of people have heard of. It was made into a movie, you know, decades ago. Samson, big, strong guy. That's always the thing. It's this big, long, thick-haired, muscle-bound fella. But I think the story of Samson before Delilah is fascinating. Like, I can't think of another word for it. I just think it's incredible. It's layered. I think there's so many things in here that are so funny. And that's what I want to talk about today. The story of Samson before Delilah. So that's what we're going to cover. We're starting in Judges 13. I haven't done it this way in a while, so I'll tell you everything I'm reading is from the NIV. If you want to follow along, or go back and read later, starting in Judges chapter 13. Here we go. Let's dive in. So we start here, verse 1. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. So this was kind of the rhythm of Judges, is that a judge would show up, the Israelites would sort of get right for a little while, and then a verse like this would indicate the change. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So then they would like fall away, and there would be a need for a judge again. So verse 2, a certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, "You are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb. He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines." So this is actually like a theme throughout the Bible. You may get a sense of that if you have any familiarity with the Bible, especially with a woman who's childless, and then a child who is to be some sort of deliverer she gets pregnant with that child. So that's a theme we see often. But this is great because you get this, like, what wonderful news, right? The angel of the Lord, verse 2, a certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. Verse 3, the angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, "You are barren and childless, but you're going to become pregnant, give birth to a son," yada, yada, yada. So this is huge news for this family. This would be, you know, world-changing news. Not even just the fact that they were going to have a baby, such a big deal. The fact that this baby is going to do all these things and be all these cool things. I'm sure this woman is thrilled. She can't wait to go tell her husband. She's what great news she has to share. And she does it in verse 6. She does it like this. Then the woman went to her husband and told him, quote, "A man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God. Very awesome. I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. But he said to me, 'You'll become pregnant and have a son. Now then, drink no wine or other fermented drink, and do not eat anything unclean, because the boy will be a Nazarite from God from the womb until the day of his death.'" I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a worse intro to a story than she delivers right here to her husband. A man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God. Very awesome. Like, that's such a fun note to add on there. Very, very awesome. Case, I don't know what your thought of an angel of God is, but let me tell you what it looked like. Very awesome. And then right into this. I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. How suspicious is this story right away? Like, maybe this is like an exchange she's had with her husband before, where she's not real good at retelling stories of people that stop by the house or something like that. So she's just like front-ending it. I'll just tell you right now, I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. Let me just get that out of the way right here. Reminds me a little bit of when I was a kid, and I would come home from, you know, camp or whatever I was doing, and my mom would be like, did you play with anybody? Did you make any friends? Like, yeah, I played with this kid. We played basketball. It was really fun. Oh, what was the kid's name? Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. We never got to that. I was shooting hoops. He was shooting hoops. There we go. We were off to the races. I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. So then you get in verse 8. This is her husband. Verse 7 was, he said to me, you'll become pregnant and have a son. Now then, drink no wine or other fermented drink, and do not eat anything unclean, because the boy will be a Nazarite of God from the womb until the day of his death. Verse 8, then Manoah prayed to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I beg you to let the man of God you sent to us come again to teach us how to bring up the boy who is to be born. I love that. I beg you to let the man of God you sent to us to come again. It would be very cool to me, please God, if I could maybe verify this story is what I feel like I'm hearing in there. Not that I don't believe that this happened. The story was retold to me in some amount of detail. But please, pardon your servant, Lord. I beg you to let that man of God you sent come back to teach us how to raise the boy. Verse 9 says, God heard Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman while she was out in the field. But her husband, Manoah, was not with her. So verse 10, the woman hurried to tell her husband, he's here, the man who appeared to me the other day. So we're trying to get this story together. So he comes back to the woman. The woman's like, just stay here. I don't want to retell this story again. I already didn't do this right the first time. Could you just wait and tell him to his face? So then Manoah got up, followed his wife. This is verse 11. When he came to the man, he said, are you the man who talked to my wife? I am, he said. So then there's a discussion here. Well, we'll just keep reading. So Manoah asked him, verse 12, when your words are fulfilled, what is to be the rule that governs the boy's life and works? Verse 13, the angel of the Lord commanded, your wife must do all that I have told her. She must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, nor drink any wine or other fermented drink, nor eat anything unclean. She must do everything I have commanded her. Great, we're all squared away. Verse 15, Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, we would like you to stay until we prepare a young goat for you. This is nice. This is just hospitable. He's saying, thank you for coming back. I realize this was inconvenient. We couldn't get our stories together. You know, I appreciate you. We'd love to stay. We'd love to prepare a goat for you. Verse 16, this is the angel's response in verse 16. The angel of the Lord replied, even though you detain me, I will not eat any of your food. But if you prepare a burnt offering, offer it to the Lord. Manoah did not realize that it was the angel of the Lord. In parentheses. But this response, the angel of the Lord replied, even though you detain me, I will not eat any of your food. I cannot help but hear an indictment in there about the cooking abilities of this family when an angel says, even if you trap me here, which I can't imagine is an option when you're an angel of the Lord and these are just normal folk. Even if you detain me, I won't eat any of your food. If you could somehow trap me here, I still wouldn't eat any of this food. But then again, maybe the angel didn't like goat. That could be a thing. People have preferences, you know what I mean? It's a vegan angel. I don't know. Then verse 17, then Manoah inquired of the angel of the Lord, what is your name so that we may honor you when your word comes true? He replied, why do you ask my name? It is beyond understanding. Then Manoah took a young goat together with the grain offering and sacrificed it on a rock to the Lord. And the Lord, this is verse 19, and the Lord did an amazing thing while Manoah and his wife watched. As the flame blazed up from the altar toward heaven, the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame. Seeing this, Manoah and his wife fell with their faces to the ground. When the angel of the Lord did not show himself again to Manoah and his wife, Manoah realized that it was the angel of the Lord. That's great that it's at that point. He just ascended in a fire to heaven, and it's when the angel of the Lord did not show himself again to Manoah and his wife is when Manoah realized that that was... I'm starting to think that that was maybe not a normal person. So Manoah says in verse 22, we are doomed to die, he said to his wife. We have seen God. But his wife answered, if the Lord had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and grain offering from our hands, nor shown us all these things, or now told us this. I just love this couple. I feel like this dynamic of them is familiar. It feels like so genuine. I love these details we get, that we even get this conversation afterward of the husband saying, well, we're going to die now. We've seen God. We're definitely going to die. And then the wife saying, if the Lord had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering, grain offering from our hands, nor shown us all these things, or now told us this. Almost saying like, well, why would he go through this trouble to come back and then leave and then kill us? That doesn't make any sense. just them hashing out this divinely ordained mission that they're now on, and they're having to hash out whether or not God's going to kill them before it all starts. The woman gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. He grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him while he was in Mahanadan between Zorah and Eshtol. So that's Judges 13. This is the kind of the origin story of Samson here. Moving into to chapter 14. We're in Judges chapter 14 now. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. You know, different cultures, I guess, at different time periods did marriage differently. I think this is a very funny introduction of a married couple. I don't think they've talked at this point, and I think that's confirmed because later on in verse 7, it says, then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. So it wasn't until we were like taking active steps toward marriage that they actually exchanged words. I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. I hope that also more detail was given at some point, because that's a pretty tough task to give your parents. I saw a woman in a city. If you could go ahead and go get her for me as a wife. verse 3, his father and mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? Of course, everybody wants at this time, they wanted their, to marry inside the tribe of Israel. That's what that's referring to. I realize that's kind of a funny, out of context question. Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives? At this point, that was what they did. But Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. In verse 3, he doubles down. Get her for me. She is the right one for me. We haven't talked. We don't need to talk. This is what love at first sight in practice right here. Get her for me. She's the right one for me. His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. So verse 5, Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring towards him. Samson, that is. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. It's verse 6. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have torn a young goat. You know how one just easily tears a young goat. What? Like, who is it easy for to tear a young goat? I don't understand this comparative here. I don't think it's easy to tear any animals in two. But apparently, author of this text thought, you know how you do the goats. He did that, but with a lion. Crazy, right? He told neither his father nor his mother what he'd done. This is what I said, verse 7. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. He was a good note. He liked her. We don't get her perspective, but Samson liked her. Verse 8. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, and in it he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands and ate as he went along. This is so relatable to every parent that has walked around anywhere with a kid. They're just constantly wanting to eat and touch everything. And all you do is say, don't, everything is dirty. Everything's dirty. Don't touch it. Don't eat it. Don't lick it. And then you turn your back for 2 seconds and your kid goes into a lion carcass and grabs a handful of honey and shoves it straight in their mouth. This is life. This is what it is. I was recently, we're like still doing the masks, and we were at Disney semi-recently, and I had, Finn was in there, and he's like, this mask is like, I had to save it from the ground 3, 4, 5 times. This kid thinks nothing about his mask going all over the floor of a public restroom and then going back onto his face. You turn your head for 2 seconds, they're scooping out honey from a dead lion carcass. Back to verse 9. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they ate it too. Well, that was nice. If you are going to do that, you should share. So the one lesson got through, the sharing lesson got through, but what we don't eat and what we do eat, you know, didn't get through. He did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Verse 10. Now his father went down to see the woman, and there Samson held a feast, as was customary for young men. When the people saw him, they chose 30 men to be his companions. This is kind of nice. This is kind of a nice ritual that we might want to bring back. Someone gets married, we commit 30 people to be their friend, because it's hard to make friends sometimes as like a grown-up adult. You get busy with kids and everything. Here's 30 friends that you have to pick from. A couple of these friends got to be good. You know, they can be your closer friends, but here's 30 to pick from. Verse 12, let me tell you a riddle, Samson said to them. And what, this is the way you really, you congeal friendships, is you start with a riddle, Samson said to them. If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. Gambling with clothes here on this riddle. Verse 13, if you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. So there's the stakes. And in verse 13, they say, tell us your riddle, they said. Let's hear it. Verse 14, he replied, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. At this point, I imagine there was a long dramatic pause where everyone was waiting for the rest of the riddle, because that just kind of sounds like an incomplete poem at this point. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, how would one even respond to that? Like, how would you even, is it a riddle because you're just confused at what are we even doing? It's not a question. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something to eat. It's a poem. Samson gives him a poem. For 3 days, they could not give the answer. And this is verse 15. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to steal our property? Is verse 15. Again, I'm not an archaeologist, so I don't know how much clothes are back in this time. But it certainly seems like 30 sets of clothes is not worth what they are threatening here. This escalates very quickly from a riddle that Samson was just casually passing on to his 30 newest friends. Now his fiance at this point, maybe she's about to become his wife, is being threatened, and his in-laws. That's in verse 15. So in verse 16, then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, "You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. I haven't even explained it to my father or mother," he replied. "So why should I explain it to you?" That's in verse 16. Great marriage tip here. As much as you can integrate your relationship with your father and mother into your spousal relationship, the more often you can do that, the better. The more often you can compare the dynamics of you and your parents' relationship with you and your spouse, the stronger that your marriage will be. I haven't even explained it to my father or mother, he replied. "So why should I explain it to you?" Verse 17, she cried the whole 7 days of the feast. And I have to pause again here because this is an interesting little factoid to me. She cried the whole 7 days of the feast, but it wasn't until the fourth day in verse 15 that the Philistines said to Samson's wife, "Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us." So I'm not sure exactly what was going on the first 3 days, but she cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people. So she was, you know, obviously very persistent, got him to crack and tell her the answer to the riddle. This is a foreshadowing of the Samson and Delilah story, if you're familiar with that, which is just a couple chapters later. She wore him down. This is verse 18. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, "What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?" And here we learn a couple of things. Apparently, this was like a Jeopardy-style question. And you were supposed to... It was a Jeopardy-style riddle. You were supposed to respond with a question, which is what they did. What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? I also have to pause here and consider, like, if this is all we were looking for, it doesn't seem like it would be that hard to guess this riddle. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. If all I'm thinking I got to come up with here is an eater that is strong and something sweet, I don't think it would have taken me 4 days to get to lion and honey. I don't think they even had all of the sweeteners we have today. I don't think stevia was on the table when you're trying to think of what could be something sweet. I think they should have gotten to honey and lion faster than they did. But we'll move on. Verse 18, Samson said to them, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." Very sweet thing. It's a very sweet way he refers to his wife there. Verse 19, then the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of everything, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. This is kind of a funny scene. Again, we don't get a lot of information. Does he go down there in like a rage, taking people's clothes? At some point, do they pick up on the fact that he's just trying to get clothes? Can you just offer the guy clothes and we can cut out some of this violence? I'm not sure, but he strikes down 30 other men, stripped them of everything, gave their clothes to those who'd explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he, Samson, returned to his father's home. This is a key point in verse 20. Samson's wife was given to one of his companions who had attended him at the feast. Fascinating little ritual here, apparently. You set it up that this woman is going to leave this wedding married. There's no two ways around that. This groom is, you know, the first choice, but obviously verse 20, Samson's wife was given to one of his companions who had attended him at the feast because he was burning with anger. He left and went home. Samson did. Verse 19. Now we're on to Judges chapter 15 here. This is sort of the third act of the story. Again, this all taking place before Samson and Delilah. Here we go. Judges chapter 15. Later on, at that time of wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, "I'm going to my wife's room." But her father would not let him go in. Verse 2. I was so sure you hated her, he said, that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. It's a good parental tip here. Go ahead and never make an attractive assessment on your kids. And more importantly, never share it publicly with anybody if you have. This was so at the ready. This guy knocks on the door. I was so sure you hated her, he said. I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. Just giving away human beings here. Sweet dad. Verse 3. Samson said to them, this time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. And in verse 4, so he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. The way with animals that Samson has here, unbelievable. Obviously, just effortlessly tears apart goats, tears apart a young lion, catches 300 foxes. I mean, the functionality of this is how do you even catch 300 foxes and then tie them tail to tail in pairs? It's unbelievably feat, an under-discussed miracle of the Bible, for sure. He then fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and standing grain together with the vineyards and olive groves. This is verse 6. When the Philistines asked who did this, they were told Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his companion. So the Philistines respond. I'm going to skip a couple of verses here. We'll just go through. So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Samson said to them, since you've acted like this, I swear that I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in a cave at the rock of Etam. The Philistines went up and camped in Judah, spreading out near Lehi. The people of Judah asked, why have you come to fight us? We've come to take Samson prisoner, they answered, to do to him as he did to us. You can only assume that means that they intend on catching 300 foxes and tying torches to their tails. Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Edom and said to Samson, don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us? Samson answered, I merely did to them what they did to me. They said to him, this is the Israelites, we've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines. Samson said, swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves. Agreed, they answered. We will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you. This is a bold exchange here by the Israelites, as if they, like, I realize there's a lot of them. There's 3,000 men from Judah that go down to this cave. But the manner of this conversation, like, okay, we won't kill you. I don't know. I feel like Samson had good odds, but I digress. Verse 13, so they bound him with two new ropes, led him up from the rock. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came toward him shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. It's in verse 15. 1,000 men with a jawbone of a donkey. And then in verse 16, he drops this. Then Samson said, with a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. verse 17. When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was called Ramath Lehi. You know, I just love this story so much. I think there are so many fun things about it. There's so many little details given. There's so much insight we get into Samson here. But I think the real key is his love, his under broadcast love of poetry. He starts out with out of the eater something to eat, out of the strong something sweet, which some people call the riddle. And then here we go at the end of this little journey we're on. With a donkey's jawbone, I've made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jaw, surrounded by the people that he has just conquered. Jawbone still in hand. what's the first thing that comes to his mind is more poetry. And that's what he fires off in this moment. With a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. And it kind of rhymes in English, which is amazing that it has, through time, even in that moment, this is the kind of inspiration Samson was working with, which is probably our biggest takeaway of this whole story. Because I'm going to be honest with you, one of the reasons why I have shied away from this story in the past is I'm not really sure exactly what to take away from it. But I'll tell you this, when the spark of inspiration for poetry hits, you move, okay? You write the poem. Wherever you are, whatever you do, whatever you're doing, you write the poem that comes to your heart. I was talking to Rachel about this, and she said it best. So I'm going to quote her here at the end. When the spark of inspiration be hitting, you be spitting. So if you want to just write that down, hang that up on your mirror when you start the day. When the spark of inspiration be hitting, you be spitting. That's the big takeaway. I do want to end this because it's just kind of, it's kind of great, this ending. The end of this chapter, we're on verse 18. Or let's start at 17. When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone. The place was called Ramoth Lehi. Verse 18. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord, "You've given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Then God opened up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned, and he revived. So the spring was called En Hakkor, and it is still there in Lehi. Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines. Just again, I love this character detail of Samson. He's thirsty. He cries out to the Lord, "I'm about to die of thirst." There's just a bit of extraness to Samson that I very much appreciate. And I think we get a glimpse into here in these stories. And all this happens before the great story of Samson and Delilah, which is a fascinating story, and I encourage you to read it. That takes place in Judges 16. You can read the story of Samson and Delilah. So that's it. I know this was a longer walk through scripture. Maybe one thing I was thinking was it might be cool to give all of my wonderful listeners a glimpse into this is what reading the Bible with this project in mind has done. It's given me, just these little details demand my attention now, and it has really built out fuller, more rich and layered and often funny stories. So maybe that's another good takeaway. Get lost in the details of the stories of the Bible you're reading, because they really are fascinating and fun, curious, and often very funny. So that's it. That's our episode of the Bible is Funny podcast today. Thank you so much for listening. Again, so many of you sharing it with people, contacting me through the Instagram. If you're not following on Instagram, it's at the Bible is Funny. I love hearing from listeners. Thank you for everyone leaving reviews on the podcast wherever you listen. That's great. That's so helpful. And we'll be back again with another episode of the podcast very soon.
The Bible is funny.